Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity of National Review is back from vacation. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We trust you all had a wonderful Easter weekend, and we are back in the saddle with good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. Jim, let's start with the good martini, and that is news for conservatives and really all voters in Republican primaries going forward to say you have been warned about what will happen if, in fact, the current leader in delegates and votes, Donald Trump, ends up as the Republican nominee. The matchup, regardless of who he's up against, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders in a hypothetical matchup in the fall, not good. In the Monmouth poll out March 25th.
Sad, you could even say.
Sad with an exclamation point, yes. Hillary Clinton up 48 to 38% on Trump, a 10-point margin. She's up 6. That's the closest in Quinnipiac out March 23rd. Bloomberg, I think, had it at 18 at 54 to 36. That might be an outlier. CNN, 53. Again, Clinton over the 50% mark with Trump at 41%. Fox News had it at 49 to 38. Ted Cruz is closer in most polls. He's still behind, except for the Fox News poll. John Kasich actually polls the best against Hillary and Bernie. When it comes to Bernie, he's ahead of Trump by 14 points in the Quinnipiac poll and also 20 points in the CNN poll. So, Jim, what do you make of this? And is hypothetical polling, projected polling, going to make a big difference in how people look at this?
It probably should. If you'd like to win, if you don't want to, you know, have some sort of like, well, I'm going to nominate a completely unelectable candidate, but I'll send a message to the American electorate of this is exactly who I think is perfect. And, you know, you rest of the electorate are just fools for not seeing it. Well, you can do that. It's not going to change anything. And the end result is President Hillary Clinton. But that's fine. Greg, I was just saying this to this really good guest host on the Laura Ingraham program. So there are a couple things that jump out about these numbers, because a lot of people say, oh, Jim, you can't, you know, count on these numbers this early. It doesn't really matter at this point. Well, you look at Trump's favorable, unfavorable numbers. They're terrible. They're really, really bad. His favorables, and he's sometimes as low as the high 20s and getting into the mid 30s. High 30s is a good poll for him. And his unfavorable rating, people who do not like him, is in the high 50s and sometimes going past 60%. There's a Quinnipiac poll that had 54% of Americans saying they were certain they're not going to vote for him. I mean, what do you do after that? You more than half the electorate has decided they're never voting for you.
Hope they show up, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, could Trump change their mind? Theoretically, I suppose. But the difference between Trump and Hillary and most of the other candidates is that entering this campaign cycle, most Americans didn't really know what they thought about Ted Cruz or John Kasich or most of these guys. The process of the campaign kind of introduces the figure to Americans. Well, Hillary Clinton has been front and center in American politics since about mid-1992. People have grown up with Hillary Clinton. And Donald Trump, well, he's been a celebrity since the 1980s. Now, it's new for him to step into the political arena. But people already know him, have seen him, have already kind of made up their mind about him. And it's going to take a heck of a lot to change their minds on this. And I don't think Donald Trump is capable of that. Between now and November. And the really amazing thing is that I think it's very clear from the way he behaves, Donald Trump doesn't want to change himself. He doesn't want to reinvent himself. He doesn't want to be a different person. He is who he is. And this is, at this point, a very unappealing person. In fact, arguably, the only person in America who's so unappealing he would lose to Hillary Clinton. Ted Cruz at least beats Hillary in some of these head-to-head matchups. And for what it's worth, John Kasich is way ahead now, or consistently ahead. Now, John Kasich is the guy who said Jesus told him to expand Medicaid and part of Obamacare. If he's unacceptable to a Republican, I can understand that. But at least he can say, look, head to head, I can beat Hillary Clinton. You know, Trump keeps insisting this. And like 22 of the past 25 head to head national polls have him trailing, in a bunch of these trailing by double digits.
What does it say that in all the head-to-heads, the person who looks the strongest is the avowed socialist? Or you look at all these different polls, Bernie Sanders dominates Trump, as we mentioned. He's ahead of Cruz fairly comfortably in most of these, and he's either dead even or slightly ahead of Kasich. Is this just a matter of how unpopular Hillary is that even Bernie Sanders is appealing to half or more of the people right now?
I think there's two things. One is I can put this semi-seriously, or I can put it not at all seriously. The first is that most people find Bernie Sanders fairly likable. Even those who find him, disagree with his viewpoint and find him an avowed socialist, and his ideas would be, his entire philosophy would be toxic waste for America as we know it. It's still, there's something likable about the guy compared to Hillary Clinton, you know. And I think there are quite a few, the common line amongst Republicans is, you know, look, for years we've been saying Democrats are socialists. In Bernie Sanders, we finally have somebody who agrees with us. So there's a reason for, you know, people to like Bernie Sanders in a way they don't like Hillary Clinton, even if he is a devout socialist. And remember, most people are convinced that under socialism, somebody else will be paying the price.
Of course. Speaking of which, let's move to the bad martini now. And President Obama got a lot of grief for a lot of good reasons, for his trip to Cuba, his going to the baseball game in the immediate aftermath of the terrorist attack, him morally giving equivalence to American values in some ways against Cuban values and vice versa. But the media coverage kind of stopped for the most part after he left Cuba and went to Argentina. And while there, in addition to doing the one public thing that got out, which was the tango, the president also spoke to a group and the issue came up of capitalism versus communism. Jim, this is not the argument I heard when I was an undergrad at Hillsdale College, but here's Obama talking about the fuzzy differences between capitalism and communism.
In the past, there's been a sharp division between left and right, between capitalist and communist or socialist. And especially in the Americas, that's been a big debate, right? You know, you're a capitalist Yankee dog, and oh, you know, you're some, you know, crazy communist, you know, that's going to take away everybody's property. And, I mean, those are interesting intellectual arguments, but I think for your generation, you should be practical and just choose from what works. You don't have to worry about whether it neatly fits into socialist theory or capitalist theory. You should just decide what works.
Then there's 100 million or more murdered people who would disagree that, hey, just do whatever works. When you look at individual prosperity, the growth of a middle class, economic, religious freedom, go down the list. The idea that he's trying to blur the lines here even more than he and Sanders and others already have over the years is very nauseating.
That was a really bad quote, Greg. And I'm sitting thinking, if you really have that philosophy, would Barack Obama have taken our side in the Cold War? The way he's talking about this, he makes it sound like it's this intellectual dispute by a bunch of eggheads with no relevance to, as if there was no difference between communism and socialism and capitalism and free markets. Really? It's just kind of baffling. And the way he just kind of hand waves and dismisses, I mean, like, I suppose there are some people who would look at, you know, there might be one guy from Vermont, Greg, who'd look at this and say, finally, an American president who is not so vehemently anti-socialism. But, you know, in this, and also it's like, it's, you know, first, and the other thing is he says, hey, whatever works, as if they have equal records of success, right? As if there was some sort of, you know, some socialist, North Korea's economy is booming, man. You know, it's roaring over there. Cuba, I was just there, you know, all the new cars they have on the streets. Communism fails people. And oh, by the way, it's really interesting that you don't really see communist countries that have genuinely free elections, that have genuine voices of opposition and permit free press and free expression and protests and things like that. Like, why does communism always come with this oppressive police state that will knock on your door in the middle of the night and make you disappear if you speak out against the regime? Do you think that the fact that there's like this one-to-one ratio between human rights and communist regimes, do you think that might be a signal there? That there's something wrong with the core philosophy of it? Any school of thought would just say, look, once you put a small group of people in charge of everything and give them total absolute power over the entire people with no restrictions on their ability to punish others for crimes, for perceived crimes against the state, then they run everything smooth. You know, any political philosophy or economic philosophy that comes with gulags and a secret police is never going to work, Mr. President. Rudy Giuliani had said that Obama doesn't love this country the way we do and things like that. There are times that can sound harsh to people who want to give the president the benefit of the doubt. But when the president says things like this, it really does give you this sense that he doesn't look at free, traditionally free market capitalistic America, with some portions of our economy and some states more capitalist than others. He looks and doesn't see something good. And he basically says, you know, it doesn't work well enough. What they have down there in South America, all of their, you know, nationalization of industry and things like that, if that works better, go with it. And the fact that he doesn't see any difference there really is a chilling statement from an American president.
I think he would technically, or at least officially, be on our side in the Cold War. I think he would probably just dispatch John Kerry out to make another fantastic deal with Brezhnev or any of the other guys that were there back in the day.
He might have objected to the carbon emissions from the giant statist apparatus and all of that. Or maybe the meltdown at the nuclear reactor in Ukraine.
Yes.
Yeah, that was bad for the environment too. In addition to, you know, killing lots of people and making people sick and turning a whole corner of Ukraine into this radioactive playground. But so, you know, bad communists, bad. You finally found something you didn't like there.
On to the crazy martini now, Jim. And Easter is such a joyful time. Obviously, millions and millions of people celebrating the resurrection. And many of those people also enjoying some of the other traditions, and other people do as well, like Easter grass, Easter baskets, Easter bunnies, Easter egg hunts is one of those. But, of course, people who stink have to ruin everything. This is a story from the UK Daily Mail, but it's about a story here in the United States. An Easter egg hunt descended into chaos on Saturday after parents in Orange, Connecticut stormed the field. Children as young as four were trampled by adults in a rampage to steal buckets and grab as many of the 9,000 hidden eggs as possible from the third annual free event at the Pez headquarters. One four-year-old kid was left bloody on the sports field, and a two-year-old girl was shoved into the mud. Apparently what happened was they had different fields for different age groups, and they opened at different times, and as soon as the first field opened, parents at all the fields just decided to bum rush, is the word that one person used, the field, to the point where on the toddler field, one of the quotes is, in the toddler field, it was more of a greedy parent field, not one toddler hunting for eggs. It was nuts, way too many people and more than the staff could handle. One person saying, when my son left, he had a broken basket and he was hysterically crying. A grandparent wrote on Facebook saying, my grandson ended up bloody from an adult in the 9 to 12-year-old section knocking into him. Jim, we see this a lot, obviously, in youth sports and so forth, but this is why we can't have nice things.
You know, I'm thinking back to some of the Easter egg hunts when my boys were smaller. And there was some group, it was like, let's say like 1, 2, and 3-year-olds, right? I'm like really tiny kids. And like you just had to explain to them what they were trying to do. And then they would just like, you know, sit, look around, be missed by the crowd, and then see the giant bunny suit and cry. Because for some reason, the Easter bunny to really small children is the most terrifying thing they could possibly imagine. And if you look at it, like you get a couple crying, you know, kids crying on Santa's lap, but it's always the Easter bunny who comes across as this, you know, giant carnivorous carrot-eating monster out of their nightmares. Easter egg hunts are kind of a flawed concept from the beginning. We've already seen – we're a culture that has, you know, people screaming at Little League umpires and you know, road rage. We express rage at the supermarket when somebody's cart crashes into ours. It's a hostile – to be right. The fact that this occurs on Easter, on a holiday, at an event for children, you know, but here's the third thing. Greg, what was in the eggs?
I don't even know.
Was it like gold coins or something? Was it something that would justify – oh, the Hope Diamond's in there, kids. Go get for it. You know, like it's just bizarre. Generally, it's really crappy candy. It's the stuff they couldn't sell at Halloween. So why are people elbowing each other and stepping on children? And I mean, I just – this is a disgusting and vile and revolting attitude, Greg, that really is reserved for, you know, completely different environments like Oakland Raider games and you know, Black Friday. You know, there's a time and place in America for you to be obnoxious and crush the person next to you. And Easter Sunday Easter egg hunts are not that, Americans. Shame on you.
One of the quotes actually goes right along with what you said. Quote, it was worse than being at Walmart on Black Friday, wrote one of the parents on the Pez Facebook page. So I'm guessing it could have just been Pez in these eggs. How many people would you assault for Pez?
It's Pez, right? It's like one step above a breath mint. How would you like to do that? What made you step on that child? Well, there was a Pez at stake. So,
and listen, folks, as we go back to the communism story, this is what happens when communism rules. People do this because they have to stand in line for bread. And when the bread runs out, they basically beat each other up for the loaf of bread. So all these stories kind of work together today. If you don't like beating each other up about Pez, stop doing it. And also don't embrace communism.
Don't beat people for Pez. It's really just about as low a bar as we can set in America in 2016.
Well done, Connecticut parents. Well done.
Well done. Right now, Nevada voters are saying, glad we're not those guys.
Jim, welcome back. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.